fuck that kid, man. That Indian should have pulled the tomahawk out on him or something. July 30th, 2020. Mike Tyson fight tapes. Jeff was like, man, you see a hard mic punching. You're about to go down the rabbit hole with Joe and Brian. If that was me, I'd have been okay. I'm Brian. With me, as always, way over there at a socially accepted 6 foot difference, at least, is my good friend Joe. Joe, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing all right, man. I'll tell you, this is my first week back at work, and it's kicking my ass.
Well, that's what work does.
I feel stupid saying that. My brother gets his ass kicked at work. My brother gets up at like 2 in the morning so that he can be at the work site before the sun comes up so that they don't burn to death. And pours concrete. You know, for 8 hours. And
you're getting your ass kicked.
And I'm getting my ass kicked because I can't take my noon nap anymore.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody has their problems, man. And, you know, just because, you know, yours aren't, you know, having to do with you laying concrete at 2 o'clock in the morning. I mean, not being able to take your nap, that's a problem in your eyes.
Can I say the struggle is real?
Yeah. You just can't say that in mixed company.
Yeah, I want all our millions of listeners out there to just act like I didn't say that.
Yeah, some things are hard to unhear, man, but we'll try.
Yes. So, you know what time it is?
Yeah.
Motherfucker.
What are you drinking tonight, Joe?
You know, I am really, it's really understated. I'm having a Coke and a smile and a splash of lemon. Sorry. Did I say Coke? I meant Pepsi.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm having a cola. Yeah, a Pepsi and a smile.
Well, I'm having a Coke Zero and a smile.
Yo, those things are bad for you, man.
Oh.
You know why?
Why?
When you go down that list of ingredients, sorry. When you pop the top and you put it to your lips and you drink, it's sweet, isn't it?
Wait, you mean like this?
Yeah, like that.
Oh, that wasn't as dramatic as I had hoped.
Yeah, no, it was. Yeah. Typically, it's, you know, popping, but next time. But yeah, it's sweet, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. And then it's what the aspartame.
Yeah, then you look down that list of ingredients, and you see no piece of sugar or not even the artificial corn syrup. So I mean, I better living through chemistry for most things, but not for my sweetener.
Yeah, typically I don't do the sweeteners, but yeah, I don't know, man.
Oh no, I'm
sugar spikes your sugar messes up your system. But although it's funny that I would choose cola, my colas to draw the line on sugar when I'm still consuming bread and beer and
everybody got a line, right?
But my cola. No sugar.
Oh yeah, it's funny because there was a comedian who used to talk about that. You'll see a guy at a McDonald's. I'll have like a two Big Macs, quarter pounder, and fries, large fries, and yeah, I'll better get like a Diet Coke. Got to cut back someplace.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I've seen that. That's good.
Yeah.
Before we get started, I want to talk about our RSS feed again.
Well, no, that's important because
it is.
We should have led with that last week, but, you know, yeah. We're wiser this week.
We make it really hard for our millions of listeners to listen. So that's why we really appreciate that you do. But I do have a functioning RSS feed, and I just I want to interestingly enough, I think on last week's No Agenda show, Adam Curry, who really is the godfather of podcast.
He's the podfather, right?
Yeah, I don't care what, you know, Adam Carolla says or Ricky Gervais or any of these people. Who Adam Curry is really, he was fundamental in not just doing podcasts, but creating the technology that podcasts operate on. And so I clipped this from that show, and let's listen to it, because he can explain a challenge that we're going to be facing better than I can. So this is Adam Curry talking about podcast apps.
As more and more people and companies start to offer podcasts, just so you understand, No Agenda Show does not upload their podcast to Spotify, TuneIn, Google Play, Stitcher, etc. We have one place where we upload, and these other apps basically take our feed, and many do it different ways. They allow you to listen to the podcast. These are actually really shitty podcast apps. So if something doesn't show up and you can't subscribe manually to a podcast feed, then that's not a podcast app. So as sad as it is, and maybe TuneIn is blocking us, maybe Spotify doesn't know what they're doing, Google Play only wants to track your behavior. That's why you can't subscribe manually. You have to submit it to the directory, and then Google is tracking your behavior. Same with Stitcher, which is now Sirius XM. So consider getting an actual podcast app, and or stop emailing me when it doesn't work.
How about a couple of recommendations? Do we have a few?
What do you use?
I just do it off the site.
Oh, I use Overcast.
Oh, okay.
I like Overcast a lot. And it's not free. You pay for it, but then you get a lot of great features.
So the podcasts have really kind of blown up with, you know, when NPR did the whole that podcast about the kid who supposedly killed his girlfriend, and I can't think of it, but I think NPR really, when NPR released that podcast, they really brought it into the mainstream, and now everyone's doing podcasts, and all of a sudden all these companies want to make their own networks, and you've seen that, like, Joe Rogan just got paid $1 billion to go to...
How much?
I said a billion, but it was in the millions.
Oh, okay.
To go to one of the main podcast networks, and they're just, and as with everything, things are just getting siloed. You know how you can't, you know, your favorite shows are split up between ABC, NBC, Netflix, whatever. So, and they're trying to end up doing that with podcasts. And so I have a podcast. We have a podcast feed, much like, and I'm going to follow the No Agenda model, in that I don't want to upload our show to other services. I want to upload it to where it is right now, joehigh.com. And I want to either submit our feed to Apple's index. I know I've talked about doing that for several weeks now, and I have. But beside that, we have a feed. And I want people who can to get a real podcast app. I use Pocket Casts. I think what Adam Curry said, Overcast. I think that's an Apple only, an iPhone only app. I'm on Android. I use Pocket Cast. You, Joe, I can't remember what one you told me that you used.
Let me pull that up. Let's see here. Podcast Republic.
Okay. So I'm not familiar with that, but here's our feed, and I'm going to put this at the top of the website. And I know the website is like, really, it's barely even a website right now. It's just a directory. I'm going to try to make it look better in the future, but I will put this feed at the on that page so that it's just click on it or highlight it. But it's https://feed.johai.com feed.johai.com/rss.xml. And that is a podcast feed for this show. And so if people are able to take that and plug it into their podcast app, that should subscribe you to this show. And depending on your app, new shows should just automatically show up for you if everything works correctly.
Can you say that again just for all the millions of listeners? Maybe somebody didn't have a pen.
It's https://feed.johai.com/rss.xml. And I will put that on the front page or on all the pages of johai.com, so you can get it from there. Yeah, so everyone, this is our 13th episode, and I really appreciate everyone who listen, who actually think to go to the website and check for new shows and download them there. But
truth be told, I'm surprised the website hasn't crashed from all the pressure that's likely being exerted on the servers.
Yes.
It's probably like a feat of information management that thing can still support.
You make me blush, Joe, because you know that I crafted and I built that from scratch myself to make it impervious to.
Actually, I didn't know that.
I shouldn't say that because I'm asking for trouble. But yeah, that I am going again. I'm going to. Once we get the artwork, I am going to submit this to. I'm going to submit this to Apple, iTunes, and hopefully, if we can get it accepted, people could just maybe even just search for Down the Rabbit Hole with Joe and Brian, and find us that way. Maybe I'll send it to you, Joe.
Yeah, I'll send it. feed.johai.com/rss.xml.
That's it. Yep.
I can remember that. All right. So what do we have in tow today?
Well, I believe the one thing we definitely want to touch on is you found some late breaking news on to have to do with the Ahmaud Arbery case, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, as we typically do, we start off with basically updating the audience on the Ahmaud Arbery case and the George Floyd case. Today we couldn't find anything on George Floyd, but we do have some information on the Arbery case, and guess who it is? The guy who just keeps on finding ways to make the news, apparently.
Yeah, he's probably like, how the fuck did I end up in this like this, man? Although he's not, as we found out, he wasn't simply the cameraman.
Oh no, he's a brutal mofo.
That's how he was first introduced to us. He was first introduced to us as the cameraman.
Yeah.
And then it was like, Andy ran over the guy.
Yeah. And then he became co-conspirator. But William Bryant Jr., who filmed Ahmaud Arbery's death, is now being probed for child molestation. This guy, I mean, I think the last time, it seemed like every time we talk about these guys, the killers, we find out something new and terrifying about them, or new and horrible. And so this comes from the New York Post. One of the three men charged in the murder of unarmed Georgia jogger Ahmaud Arbery is also the subject of a child molestation investigation, according to reports, Glynn County Police on July 15th requested that the Georgia Bureau of Investigation launch a sex crimes probe on allegations made against William Ruddy Ryan. First Coast News reports on Tuesday. A fact sheet of the investigation obtained by the TV stations lists a type of case against Brian as a child abuse/molestation investigation and notes alleged that the incident took place in Camden County and the victim is a white female. Let's see here. The GBI said no other details or documents related to the case are available at this time as it's an ongoing investigation. Brian is accused of striking Arbery, 25 years old, with his truck during the February attack. He also videotaped a shooting on his cell phone. He is being charged with malice and felony murder, along with two other suspects, former cop Greg McMichael and his son Travis. So, yeah. Like I said, every time we learn something about these guys, they just become worse people.
You know what just occurred to me as you was reading that? Let me put on my conspiracy hat again, but wouldn't this be funny? And maybe not even far-fetched, but I think we both generally assumed that this guy, the cameraman, was going to try to like flip and testify against
turns
father and son for a lighter sentence.
Uh-huh.
And so what better way to discredit him than to be able to say that to have him have to defend this as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure he probably did it, but I think it's just funny how I was listening to when you read the article and they never mentioned who made the allegations, allegations were made.
Yeah, they came up and part of me said like that part where you know somebody said that this guy did this, that there, you know, there should be more than that that you know carry today before you end up getting your face and reputation dragged across the media and around the world. Because once something like this goes up, you know, it can't come down. And that's not to defend the guy. It just, you know, I mean, what if the person was wrong? I thought it was William Bryan. What if it was William Bryant? You know? I mean, but, you know, the picture of him, he looks just so sad. And guilty. I mean, yeah. I wish I hadn't done that.
Right.
But yeah, that's neither here nor there. But yeah, he I mean, he's like the opposite of that guy who killed the who's the guy that killed Clayvon Martin? George Zimmer. George Zimmer, he gets off murder and then you hear stories of him like, you know, pulling little children out of like, you know, burning vehicles and, you know, trying to save people, but this guy,
that's right. I'd forgotten that. You're absolutely right. I had forgotten that.
Yeah, but this guy, you know, he just, you know, just on a wild tear. So that's our Arbery update for the day.
Well, let me ask you, Joe. Do you what are your memories of Mike Tyson, the boxer?
Very formidable man, formidable man, to the point where I wouldn't want to. Actually, you know what? Will Smith made a song about boxing Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
My impression of getting Mike Tyson is I would not want to get in the ring with him if I had a bat and he only had gloves. Maybe not even if I had a gun and he only had it. Depending upon how much space there was and how many shots I could get off, I probably wouldn't even want to be in a ring with him then. But yeah, super fun.
An 18 or 19 year old Mike Tyson was just a beast.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, he's coming back for an exhibition fight.
Now, who was fool enough to get in a ring with him?
Yeah, this is another great boxer, but I don't. Well, he's considered a great boxer, Roy Jones Jr.
Roy Jones Jr. Yeah, is he heavyweight?
I don't think he's a heavyweight like Mike Tyson's a heavyweight.
I'm a kid in the 80s. I was born in 80, which means, you know, to me that means.
Yeah, we had like Mike Tyson, we had Sugar Ray Leonard, Marvin Hagler. Those were kind of like the I think, at least for me anyway, those were like the boxers. The Roy Jones Juniors came along, I think, in the 90s.
Anyway,
this is just an exhibition. I don't think there's going to be. I mean, Mike Tyson's not going to be biting Roy Jones' ears off or anything like that.
Well, we hope not. But, you know, yeah. Wait, I guess he wasn't supposed to bite the first guy's ear off. So, I mean.
Right.
I mean, but wait. Wait, are people getting paid? Are they getting paid?
You know they're getting paid.
Yeah. So, you should expect that someone's going to get their ass kicked. Well, yeah, so it's like a 50-year-old guy versus a 40-year-old guy.
But, man, have you seen the recent video of Mike Tyson working out?
No, I haven't, but I imagine it's terrifying.
He's gotten back into like when George Foreman decided to come back. He didn't get into shape. He was just a fat George Foreman who had like just big, powerful stones, fists of stones that he just would pummel his opponents with.
That's why
he was successful. But he was still just a big old fat guy. Mike Tyson, he just looks scary.
Well, I mean, he's going to be, you know, in somebody's nightmares very soon. Yeah, I wouldn't have did that to myself. I mean, what was Roy Jones Jr.? Is he like, you know, is he one payment away from getting his house foreclosed on?
It's hard to say.
Yeah, I'm trying to think like, you know, what will possess a man? Be like, yep, you know what? I made a good life for myself as a boxer, and I came out of it with, you know, my senses mostly intact. Now at this late age of my life, I'm going to go jump in the ring with Mike Tyson. That's just.
It's hard to say.
The very idea. I mean, I guess the way I'm speaking about it should communicate volumes of how I feel about Mike Tyson in the ring. It's just like an unsafe idea.
Yeah. I mean, this is a guy, if you tuned into his fight, even like 30 seconds late.
Yeah, it could be over. Yeah. It could be over.
It's, you know, you want to think about what could have been, you know, what would have happened if he'd have stayed away from Robin Givens, or was that who was Robin Givens? And then if he didn't end up going to jail, and he obviously had psychological issues when he got out, and that's why he, you know, I think that's why he lost it with the British guy.
I remember that.
Lennox Lewis, Evander Holyfield, who beat him. What might have been if he'd have been able to stay out of trouble, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, but he's still Mike Tyson. So, I mean, when's the fight going to be again?
September 12th.
Right. Oh, wow.
Right. At Dignity Health Sports Park, wherever that is.
Yeah. Mr. Jones is going to have his dignity stripped. only one man is going to walk away from that with his dignity.
Let me jump to something else, Joe.
Yeah.
You sent me an article, a link to a video this week, and it was a C, whichever station has that announcer Crystal Ball.
Oh, that was the Hill.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and they were lamenting the possible future of the Democrat Party. Was it? I don't know if it was nationally or in a specific state.
What they were doing was they were looking at Virginia as a mic. Hey, can we play a piece of that?
Virginia offers a dire warning for those of us who care about workers' rights and dignity. Now, this may come as a surprise to you. It actually did to me. But Oxfam ranked all 50 states in the District of Columbia on workers' issues. Do you know where Virginia fell? Dead last. Virginia is 51st out of a possible 51. lowest possible minimum wage, no collective bargaining for employees, so-called right to work, and on and on and on. Now, I previously covered on this show how Dems, after campaigning on significant advancements in these areas in Virginia, ultimately at the behest of their corporate donors, decided to focus their political capital on things like passing the ERA and dealing with Confederate monuments, rather than really fighting for the economic interests of working people. Cultural and tokenist issues ruled the day. But at least, after tremendous efforts from a few hero lawmakers, unions, and their allies, some small but significant wins were in fact achieved for workers, at least until this past week. Citing the crisis as an excuse, Governor Ralph Northam of blackface infamy is trying to push off even the modest minimum wage increase and advancements in collective bargaining rights until next year. Of course, if you push them off once, how hard would it be just to push them off again? As an activist coalition of unions put it, it is easier to postpone a freedom than it is to take one away. Remember, unlimited corporate contributions are permitted in Virginia, and you can bet that all their corporate masters will be filling their campaign coffers and burning up their phone lines to make damn sure that Virginia stays 51st in the nation in workers' rights. Let me just say this one more time to make it totally clear. Virginia is run 100% by Democrats, and it remains dead last in the nation for issues of concern to working people.
The magic of editing. I feel like there was something else that you wanted to bring up in this section, but
I got it. So
I didn't write it down.
I did. So there were Republicans are coming out with their response to the Democrat proposed HEROES Act. And if I recall correctly, it's called HEALS. And basically the highlight is that all you really need to know about it, or one of the big things you need to know about it, is that in HEALS, the L stands for liability protection. And so the Republicans, what they want to do is the amount of money that people got for the initial COVID-19 piece, the $600 a week from the feds.
I think that was only for unemployed people.
Yes.
People who actually work got really shafted by just getting a single little pitiful payout.
Yeah, but they want to cut that $600 to $200 a week. Okay. And They want to do that. They also want to make sure that businesses that have people force people to come back to work or have people on their premises can be shielded against what they consider frivolous lawsuits. And I just think that's a kind of a crazy thing to have one's head focused on, is that you want to protect businesses from lawsuits when you have I guess that's a crazy place for your first place where you had to go.
I don't think I've ever mentioned it on the show, but I have told you about this, and I can't remember where I heard this from. I think it was from Dr. Drew, but he has a thing. He said one time that you have to deal with reality on reality's terms. And so while we would like to think that protections like this wouldn't be needed, that when things start going ramping back up full steam, that there's going to be that these kinds of lawsuits are going to start flying. And
I think your previous quote is quite instructive. That kind of leads me into the next portion of the comment that I want to make. You got to deal with reality on its terms.
Right.
What do you think the reality is going to be when you have millions of Americans? Well, I think at last count, 42 million Americans out of a job, an economy that's still not really working, and it's not working because people are kind of scared to go back to work because they don't want to get sick. What's going to be the reality when all those people realize that they no longer have any money coming in? Well, and the reality that I'm afraid of is that, hey, I think it's going to get, it's likely, I don't want to say likely, it stands to reason that of those 42 million people that are out there, some portion of them will become desperate. And, you know, if 1% of 42 million people become desperate and start engaging in robbing and just trying to get their needs met, that could get really ugly for a lot of people really fast. And so, I understand that one of the big things is that we don't want people to be living high off the hog while on unemployment. But as you said, reality, it has its own terms, and it's going to get ugly out there.
Yeah, it very well could.
So, boys and girls, be advised. You've heard it here on the rabbit hole.
Yeah, and I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer to it. I don't think anyone really does.
I mean, an answer could be, oh, that Joe, you're worrying about nothing. Things are going to be hunky dory. Yeah, there's 42 million people out there that won't have jobs, but the economy is going to spring back to life, and things are going to be great. That could be an answer. It's not a very realistic or likely one.
If the economy right now has the analogy I was going to use was that the economy has the government's boot on its neck, but that's not in light of recent events, I shouldn't say that, but that was the mental image that I had, was the economy has the government's, the economy is shit right now because the government basically turned off our economy. And I don't know. I mean, even so, we've seen that job numbers have been, again, surprising the experts.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things where if 42 million people lose their job at about the same time, and those 42 million people at about the same time also get, $600 a week and funds that, in some cases was more than what they were making in the first place, it's not a mystery then why the economy hasn't crashed, because, there's all this money sloshing around out there. So, I mean, and what you put your finger on is, you're right. The indicators that which would normally indicate that things are going to the crapper aren't indicating that yet. But that's because something extraordinary happened, and that was that whole $600 a week. Has anything like that happened in our lifetimes?
Not that I'm aware of.
And not that I'm aware of either. And so, I mean, that's a significant hiccup that's worth noting when you look around and say, okay, the economy is still sputtering along at a pretty decent clip.
But I just, to parse words, I didn't necessarily say anything about the economy. I said that there were more jobs reported than expected.
Okay.
So
as in
people are working, and people want to work.
Oh no, I don't think it's a matter of people not wanting to work. I think it's a matter of I think there still is a legitimate fear of the whole virus piece.
I wonder who's scared the people so much.
I think that's the usual suspects, and I think reality may have played a part in this as well.
Yeah,
fair enough.
I could talk and go on and on about it, but I'd just be repeating myself. You something else that you brought up right before we started was Trump had to jump on Twitter again, and he just had to throw red meat to his critics, everyone who wishes that he was a dictator, because that's what they've been calling him. He suggested pushing back the elections. I don't know why he would even say that, but he did.
I mean, it's it seems to me that, yeah, maybe he's secretly trying to throw the election, because kind of last week we were talking about him sending the federal troops out to Portland and Seattle. That's one of those things where you're like, yeah, that just sounds bad. Not good. Thumbs down. Just prima facie. And, it's, you know, the second time he's done something like that in a week. So week one, he's ordering feds to, you know, to scoop up protesters. And week two, he's suggesting that we postpone an election, a presidential election, something that didn't even occur when Abraham Lincoln was presiding over the Civil War. So
I think what we need to do, though, is, again, separate what he says versus what he does, because I think he says a lot of incendiary things. But
No.
But that was just, it was just dumb. It was just dumb to say.
Oh, no. I mean, I take you very seriously when you say separate what he says from what he does, because, you know, yeah, I mean, that's a very, you know, very good thing to do.
And I had a little story here that kind of piggyback on this, and I just found it funny because the story that I decided to pick out was Adam's shift for brains. Trump could refuse to accept results, allow peaceful transition, and it's an article about, you know, the whole will he leave the office, will he leave office, and it's just I laugh at this because since every four years since Clinton was in office, it's been, they, you know, when Clinton was in office, it was the Republicans. It was like, well, he won't leave office if he, when his term's over, he won't leave, or if he just won't turn over power. And then when Bush was in office, it was the same thing. And then we did it with Obama, and it's just funny. It's just like every 4 years they pull out the same old story, do a search and replace on some names and dates and publish it. I honestly
never heard of the will Obama give up power, because I think by the time Obama was time for him to go, I think he was ready. I mean, he just looked all haggard and,
well, no, but it was it's always the opponents. The Republicans are the ones that were like positive that he was going to pull some kind of
natural emergency or some
constitutional new jujitsu to stay for a third term or something. But it's just funny how those stories always pop up. Moving on here, I want to, Dr. Fauci, this dude, man.
So wait, depending upon who you are, Dr. Fauci is the source and fount of all truth and wisdom regarding anything having to do with disease at all, or he's Satan. Which one is he to you?
That's true. That is, it's all dependent on how you're looking at him. But what really struck me here is, we know, I just, my headline here, I call it Celebrity Fauci, because Tops, they make bubblegum baseball cards. Tops are selling trading cards of Dr. Anthony Fauci's first pitch for 24 hours. And you know, it's just, you can't deny that he has been launched into celebrity status somehow. And for what?
Yeah, but I get the feeling that if he could, like, be Dr. Fauci, the guy whom you wouldn't recognize, you know, walking down the street, or be Dr. Fauci who is being sold on baseball cards, I think he picked the former over the latter.
Yeah,
because, I mean, it's not as if he's got like Secret Service protection and you know federal men with guns to protect his person. No, he's just like, you know, this guy out there.
Well, I would imagine that he has protection. He's famous. I mean, he's famous now.
He's famous now, but yeah, I would think that he would rather not be famous.
I don't know. I mean, I think things go to people's head.
That could happen.
Power corrupts, man.
But that's assuming he's a powerful guy, which, from what I can tell, he doesn't seem to be very, very powerful or influential with the presidency here. So that's, you know.
You don't think he's had anything, any input on the the direction that this country is.
Oh no, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. I'm saying that I don't think he's as influential. Maybe let me rephrase that. I don't think he's as influential now as he may have been at some other time. And
that's fair.
Yeah, I also think that, you know, I also think if he could not be famous, I think that would be okay with him. Because you and I were talking about him. You and I were pretty, you know, mild mannered folks. But I'm sure, you know, if there's somebody who's, hey, Dr. Fauci, X, Y, and D, I hate you. Blah, blah, blah. Who needs that?
Well, that's assuming that he even associates with the common folk anymore.
Probably not. If he's been the director of something for 20 years, probably not. You know.
So a hometown boy, I'm currently in Covington, Kentucky, and a hometown boy, it's finally time for his paydays to start rolling in, and that would be Nick Sandman. He is the kid from Covington Catholic High School who...
Oh, yeah! He was with the face was the Indian.
Yeah.
Sorry, and, the Native American.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever really understood what the big hubbub was about. I just remember, you know,
the hubbub was, as with most, and this is probably one of the biggest fake news stories ever. Someone took a picture of him standing there in front of this Native American, and he had just the most snarkiest smile on his face. And I mean, it was even when I seen it, I was like, I'd like to. He looked that schmarmy.
Really, I need to look at that.
Yeah, and that picture got posted on Twitter, and it just went worldwide, and just everyone, and then just all the news networks, everyone just started piling on this kid. And they start doing stories on his high school and they just it was ridiculous how much they piled on this kid and the Indian guy who turned out to be an activist, but he was brought on all the shows and treated like a king and then after the fact. Because that was just a snapshot, literally a photograph of this kid. But there's an entire, 10-minute video, and it shows what really happened. And the story is almost the exact opposite, you know. And it was just...
Wait. You said something. You said, so the story as the picture told... You know, Indian guy beating a drum, kid being snarky, but the actual, you know, the video shows Indian not beating a drum and kid not being snarky. What does that mean?
Wow. What? So the kids, all the kids were standing in a group,
mm-hmm.
there waiting for their bus.
Mm-hmm.
And over here you have these Indians who were doing whatever, this group of Native Americans
over there. I was about to say red dot or feather.
And they were doing their thing. And I guess they were playing the drums or whatever. And then there was also a group of that group called the Black Israelites.
Okay. I've not. What about them?
Well, they were there too. Right. And so they were just attacking the Black Israelites. Were attacking the Indians, and they were making and they were hollering at and provoking these kids. And then the kids in there, they're over there, and so they just kind of like start the Indians are over there doing the drum thing, I believe. And if my order of events here are incorrect, I'm sorry. You can find the video and watch it, but. So the kids kind of start dancing or doing whatever kids will do. And again, keep in mind, these are kids. They're in high school. They're like 17, 18 at the most. These are kids. And so then the Indian guys, they start walking over to the kids. And the story is, you know, that, you know, the kid was, Salmon was standing in front of the guy and wouldn't move and wouldn't let him pass. But that's not how it went. It was that the kids were all over there doing their thing. They were having insults hurled at them. And then this guy decides to go over and just stands there and starts staring them down. And you just get that one picture of the kid who wasn't backing down, but they just got that look that, you know, and I'll admit it. When I first seen the picture, I was like, fuck that kid, man. That Indian should have pulled the tomahawk out on him or something.
And of course, all
and that's how good that picture was at conveying the wrong message. And,
well, they say a picture's worth a thousand words, and a video is worth a few thousand more.
So anyway, he went and got a lawyer and just sued everybody, and so settlements are starting to come in, and
he's got a settlement.
Yeah, the tweet, I got a screenshot of a tweet here that says, we settled with the Washington Post and CNN, and it says, the fight isn't over, 2 down, 6 to go. You know, good for him.
Sorry, what did he sue them over?
Defamation.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of those stories where I remember this occurred... I remember this occurring, around the time Trump got elected or something like that?
No, it occurred during, they were there for the woman's pro-life march in Washington, D.C.
This is how many years ago?
I think it probably happened last year.
All right. It's one of those things I just remember seeing. You know, a smiling kid and a guy with a drum. And I'm like, yeah, didn't really pay attention to it at all. And so, I'm glad that somebody out there, namely you, was on the beat. Cause yeah, this would have totally slipped my radar.
Yeah, and you know what? It's it really doesn't affect either one of us one way or the other. Although I am on a mission to become this guy's best friend.
says nothing about the settlement, huh?
All that stuff is there's a gag order you can't talk about now.
No.
Yeah. So that wraps up what I call the A block. Now you've got a fun topic coming up that predictive policing?
Oh,
is that what you called it?
Have you ever seen the movie Minority Report?
I've seen it like once or twice, but I got a feeling that I'm going to have to rewatch it.
Yeah, like here lately with Tom Cruise movies, unless it's like Mission Impossible, I have a hard time actually sitting through it and watching it, because it's just like, you know, like it just, yeah. Yeah, I don't know what it is with Tom Cruise movies now, but I, when that movie first came out, I remember watching the opening scene, and it's like, and the movie is set in the future where they have like, you know, flying cars or something like that, and Tom Cruise is some cop, he's a cop, and he's part of this program called, like, you know, pre-crime, where they have these freaks who predict, you know, who's going to get murdered and stuff like that. And, you know, Tom Cruise and his crack team of law enforcement folks and, you know, swoop in and save the person's life. And so, but apparently that's 100% fiction, that you have people that can make predictions. But what's not so fictitious is the idea of them trying to use computers and machine learning to predict where crime is going to happen. In fact, they've actually been doing this quite so much that hundreds of mathematicians are boycotting any type of work on predictive policing software.
Mm.
And I thought that was pretty cool because, you know, the idea of pre-crime or stopping crime before it happens. That's kind of a pipe dream, but this whole plan seems to want to identify. Let's see what they say here. Just to give you a little bit of background. Several prominent academic mathematicians want to sever ties with police departments across the United States, according to a letter submitted to the notice of the American Mathematical Society on June 15th. In the letter, weeks after widespread protests against police brutality and has inspired over 1,500 researchers to join the boycott. These mathematicians are urging fellow researchers to stop all work related to predictive policing software, which broadly includes any data analytics tools that use historical data to help forecast future crime, potential offenders, and victims. The technology is supposed to be used to use probability to help police departments tailor their neighborhood coverage so as to put officers in the right place at the right time. Well, just in general, how did that sound to you? Predictive policing.
I dare say, use the colloquialism. I think I used that word right. Slippery slope.
A colloquialism. That's a logical fallacy, which is okay. Also a logical fallacy. But proceed.
Well, I roll my eyes. This is just another group of people who want to jump on the anti-police bandwagon, which is fine, but make no mistake, I think they're just doing it because they want us to be able to say that we were against them too. But as far as the technology, man, pre-crime, it's a scary thing, man. I don't know what to say about it other than I'm against it. I don't, you know, you can't.
Let me tell you a little bit more about this whole pre-crime thing. Okay.
Yeah, please, because I'm kind of flailing here. I'm sounding like an idiot.
No, you're not.
Tell me some more. Educate me.
All right. According to a 2013 research briefing from the RAND Corporation, a nonprofit think tank in Santa Monica, California, predictive policing is made up of a four-part cycle. In the first two steps, researchers collect, that's one, and analyze data on crimes, incidents, and offenders to come up with predictions. From there, police intervene based on predictions and usually take the form of increased resources in a certain area at certain times. The fourth step is ideally reducing crime. So steps one and two, you take information from, okay, you know, you got, let's say you plot out all the crime in, let's say, in the city, you plot that out, you do some analysis, then I guess you start making predictions based on where the previous crime occurred, and then from there you park resources in those areas, and then from there, ideally, crime goes down.
Well, this right here, right now, this doesn't sound nearly as sexy as, I mean, you don't...
You don't even
need computers or scientists to do this. You can take the locations of 100 crimes and put push pins on a map, and wherever you see the most push pins, you can say, we need to increase our presence in this area.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
I'm not as impressed as I was earlier when they started talking. We don't need mathematicians, and you don't even need computer scientists. That's just taking the locations of crimes and plotting them on a map and looking at where the trends are, and they'll jump out at you. So it doesn't require any real special training. So
well, that actually made me what you just put your finger on made me had two is why I had two thoughts. First, you're right. This, I mean, you don't need a supercomputer. You don't need machine learning. You don't need a PhD in mathematics to, like you said, observe where something could take place, put push pins, and be like, you know what? You know, we've noticed on Saturday nights, you know, around these clubs, there's always a fight. Maybe we should have a cop there instead of, you know.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And so, I mean, but so you're right. It's not that huge of a leap. But the other piece is like, you know, I mean, I typically want to think of mathematicians as really, really, really smart people. Mm-hmm. This makes me think, well, maybe not so much. I mean, really, I mean, if...
Another group of experts who let us down.
Yeah, or another group of experts that when you look at what they're expert in, it boils down to common sense. Like if you were to find out that I had my PhD in predictive crime analytics, and you found, oh, yeah, I did my study. I studied crime patterns in Cincinnati, and I found, and I was able to discern with a high level of certainty that there's going to be an increase of drunken brawls on Friday and Saturday nights. Yeah. Would you be impressed with me?
Yeah, exactly. No.
All right, good. And the second piece is like, it seemed like every time you turn around, mathematicians and quote unquote scientists are putting together some technology, which they, you know, in the process of doing, they kind of realize, yeah, you know what? This could go south in so many different ways, but let's keep on doing it. I'm sure it'll work out. I mean,
one of these days, artificial intelligence is going to take over the world. So let's keep working on artificial intelligence.
We believe that Terminator is real. Terminator could be real, but...
I wish there was something we could do to stop this.
Like, stop what I'm doing right now? Nah. That's just too easy, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just like, okay, it's not all that impressive. And, you know, you guys always are... you're thinking like, yeah, maybe we should stop this. Maybe we shouldn't be doing this. If only someone could have, you know, if only could it be foreseen the negative consequences of what I'm doing right now. Oh, they were. And yes, I'm still doing it. Yeah. Exactly. Maybe they're not the brightest.
Well, you know, while these mathematicians have let me down, I still like this idea. And I'm still a little scared of it because, you know, machine learning is real. And, you know, just imagine, I'm sure that, you know, like I have an Android phone here, and it does all kinds of, it'll do some things every once in a while that really kind of, it first impresses me that it was so useful, but then it makes me think, that's kind of scary that it apparently knows me so well that it can
predict your speech.
It can do these things. And so imagine, you know, if someplace and my phone says, pops up and suggests that I check out this bar or check out this restaurant or something, we just unsolicited, it just pops up and says, you know, hey, there's someplace right around here. Do you want to go check it out? Pretty cool, but also kind of scary. And so imagine that kind of helpfulness being co-opted into
a local pig department.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I can see why there would be concern. And if these mathematicians are the ones writing or helping write this machine learning algorithms, then yeah, I can get behind that and say, yeah, put the kibosh on it. But it's machine learning is, you know, what makes machine learning more powerful is the more and more data that it has to consume.
Now,
so
you've made reference to a phrase several times in that letter.
Yeah.
And the word was, the phrase was machine learning. I'm going to ask you to define it for us, and then we're going to put a pin in it because that, you know, that's a larger conversation that that one of these days there'll be a technology show. But
we keep threatening that, don't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it'll happen in piecemeal. But
machine learning, I consider machine learning to just be being able to take mass amounts of information and analyzing it in such a way that it becomes useful in multiple ways. And that's at its most simple level. But and that's typically done on, you know, big, powerful machines with lots of processing power and terabytes of information about whatever. So, yeah.
Quick question. When was the last time you heard the phrase big data?
I hear it all the time. It's
You're saying?
Big data is kind of like what the company that I just started working at, they're using big data and machine learning to enhance their business. So,
it is dawned on me that maybe 5-7 years ago, I would hear the phrase big data. Maybe it was 10 years ago. Big data, just everywhere. But it just seemed as if you don't hear the phrase big data anymore, but you see other, I guess, applications of big data. So
I think back then, it was like Google and Amazon really were big data really, companies that had big data. I mean, especially Google, whose original mission statement, I think, was to index everything in the world or something like that.
Index all of human knowledge. But
you know, when we had those Snowden leaks and they revealed all the information that the government's been collecting about us through pretty much every digital form of communication, and then you think they have that data. I mean, because they didn't get rid of it when they got caught. They just was like, well, you caught us. but we're still going to use this data against you.
They don't have it in their possession now. There was some, I don't recall, there was a law where they have, I think the last time they talked about the whole Patriot Act, they talked about how they would, no longer be having that information in their possession, but they would, it would be in the hand of the telecoms now, and then the Fed would have to, get a warrant to access it. I'm sure they probably have just as ready access to it as they ever had before, but there's a few extra, hoops they have to jump through before they can violate your privacy.
Well, just keep in mind that what makes machine learning so powerful, and what makes it the one thing that makes it better and more accurate, is just the more data that it has to consume. And so that's a lot of information to consume right there.
Going down the rabbit hole regarding this whole predictive policing a little bit more. So apparently there are only about 50 police stations in the country that are using this type of predictive technology right now. 50 police agencies that are using this predictive technology right now. And that doesn't sound like very much when you realize that there are over 18,000 police departments in the United States. But when they're asked how many people in the United States are, covered by or quote-unquote protected by this type of software, says 1 in 33 Americans is in some way protected or affected by this type of software. So they say it's so many people because apparently larger departments, New York City, are more likely to use this type of policing tactic. And a lot of the advocates say that it's kind of like the it basically helps them more accurately or efficiently distribute manpower. But like as you put your finger on earlier, you could accomplish the same goal by push pins in a map.
Yeah.
So But apparently, this is more than just a theological, theoretical concern. You see here, and they've actually put together some guidelines as to, you know, the things they say must be present in order for this this technology to not be dangerous. And they are any algorithms with high impact, with potential high impact should face public a public audit. So basically, you know, if you have an algorithm that's going to impact a lot of people, it should be subject to a public audit where, you know, I guess the members of the public can review it and see what's going on. What do you think about that?
That's the foundation of open source software. I'm all for it.
Okay.
That's the most secure software you'll ever have is open source and software that can be vetted by other professionals.
Okay.
Because that's I'm all for that. That would be the number one thing that needs to that could at least ensure that nothing
overtly below, evil.
Yeah.
But second, experts should participate in the audit process as a proactive way to use mathematics to prevent abuses of power. That makes sense? Let me read that again. Experts should participate in the audit processes as a proactive way to use mathematics to prevent abuses of power. I guess that makes sense. I mean, if you see something odd in the data, if you see clusters of people getting pulled over, and you see clusters of people getting pulled over, but there's never any arrests that come out of it, or the arrests that come out of it, people always walk. Right?
I guess I assumed in the first one that experts would be doing the audits.
This one says the public.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, the first one says public. The second one says experts, and that's probably a good thing to put your finger on.
Yeah, but you know what? There are a lot of probably some of the smartest computer hackers out there are in the public, so that's important too. Absolutely.
Third, mathematicians should work with community groups, oversight boards, and other organizations like Black and AI and Data for Black Lives, who develop alternatives to oppressive and racist practices.
Blah 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 blah. Right. Let's have a board and
okay.
And yeah. You know, now I think we're just going to start pandering.
Right. So, Brian, what do you really think about this? That recommendation?
Well.
I think there's some.
I don't know. Again, it's like words. It sounds good, I guess, but it's like what we were listing. What was it? Was we reading down through a list of suggested reforms for police?
Yeah.
A few other shows back, and then we start getting into these kind of wishy-washy.
What does that mean?
Right. So yeah, I mean, it sounds great, I guess, but I'm not sure that it's got any real practical. Anyway, that's just me, though. Yeah. Rico, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I need to stop interrupting.
Oh no, it's just that interesting, man. And last but not least, academic departments with data science courses should implement learning outcomes that address the legal, ethical, and social implications of such tools. Who could disagree with that? Let's not think about the legal and ethical implications of what we're doing. Isn't that the very same issue, or the lack thereof, that got them in the problem in the first place?
Exactly. Yeah.
it's telling that that's number four. Probably should be number one. So yeah, there you have it. Predictive policing and hundreds of mathematicians. Approximately 1,500 of them no longer are for it.
They're taking a stand, goddammit.
Someone had to take a stand.
Someone had to represent the nerds.
Someone.
Yeah.
Nerds. Whatever happened to those movies? Those are funny movies.
Oh, you can't. They're still out there. I've got them in the archives, on my local archives, but they'll be purged from the history soon enough.
Really?
Oh yeah, you can't make fun of gay people or treat women in inappropriate, you know, as sexual objects.
Oh man, all the things that make TV worth watching, can't do that anymore.
No, you can't do that anymore. Man. Are you trying to push my buttons, man?
I'm sorry, Ryan. I just, you know, just lamenting the good old days.
Ah yes. I'm not going to get sidetracked, but. Never mind. We need to keep moving on. This has been a good show, and I have something here that I think is very important for people to hear.
Is it going to be another reading of the Crazy Man?
I'm not going to do those two shows in a row. I'm going to hit you with the Kaczynski zingers when you're. I'm going to space them out more.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, this is, and I don't know whether maybe it's possible people haven't heard about this, but, this is, where's this article? Okay. This is from whitehouse.gov is where but it's all over the place, but it's, President Donald J. Trump is taking action to lower drug costs and ensure that Americans have access to life-saving medications. Now, if this all, honestly, if all this pans out as I'm guessing is planned, this should seal his reelection alone. This is, I don't have an article, but I seen headlines that after he announced these, just like all the big pharma representatives just was like, we're not meeting with you anymore. We're done.
Really?
They were this upset by these, and so
yeah. Typically, when they release him like that, all the people, you know, all the execs already, you know, kind of you know, are on board, so to speak. And so the idea, I did not realize that part.
These are things that could help real people. Right now, you hear about people, you know, who can't. I guess like the price of EpiPens went up from $10 to $1,000 or something, you know. And so anyway, these are just the highlights of them. I think the first order directs federally qualified health centers to pass along massive discounts on insulin and epinephrine. Received from drug companies to certain low-income Americans. Pass along the discount. So, yeah, if they're getting discounts and they're keeping them to themselves, yeah, okay. The second order will allow state plans for safe importation of certain drugs, authorize the re-importation of insulin products made in the United States, and create a pathway for widespread use of personal importation waivers at authorized pharmacies in the United States.
Wait. Personalized importation. So an individual being able to import drugs from another country.
Oh, I think, because you always hear about how Canada has much cheaper drugs than... I think that's what that refers to.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of that. It was just the phrasing of it, which is if you wanted someone to not understand it, that was
exactly
all about doing it.
Like, you that could have been written much better.
Yeah.
The third order will prohibit secret deals between drug manufacturers and pharmacy benefit manager middlemen, ensuring patients directly benefit from available discounts at the pharmacy counter. Now, I want you to pay very close attention to pharmacy benefit manager.
Yeah.
Because when I'm done here, I have a clip that I want everyone to listen to that's just going to piss you off incredibly.
I was about to say, I like being pissed off, but no, I don't.
The fourth and final order ensures that the United States pays the lowest price available in economically comparable countries for Medicare Part B drugs. The United States often pays 80% more for these drugs than other developed countries. It's time to reduce the price Americans pay for these costly Part B medications, and absent successful negotiations with drug company executives, this order will be implemented on.
Oh, wow. So he literally put a gun to their head and said, hey, you know, we're going forward with this unless you got, you know what? Good on him.
Oh, you know what? I could have. Let's see here. As much as I hate listening to him talk, let's see what this.
So today I'm taking a bold and historic, very dramatic action to reduce the price of prescription drugs for American patients and American seniors. Previous administrations did nothing, absolutely nothing, as drug lobbyists, special interests, and foreign countries fairly ripped off our citizens. Under the last administration alone, drug prices rose a staggering 55%. Thanks to my administration's aggressive action since taking office, we have successfully lowered drug prices for the first time in 51 years.
The likes of which the world has never seen.
Wait.
But this reduction is still not close to what I want, what I expect, and I'm looking for...
I'm sorry, what was you going to say? I can't. I don't have the ability to rewind, but...
Oh, sorry.
Did you want to comment on something?
Oh, keep. I can comment later.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Of course.
Help for our great seniors, especially, in particular, and that's what we're doing today. You'll hear something which will be very shocking. So we're doing things that nobody thought could be done. It's going to have an incredible impact. Unfortunately, we've been waiting for Congress to take action for many decades to reduce drug prices for more than just a small handful of people. But even the small handful of people never got price reductions. And I'm unwilling to wait any longer. Therefore, today I'm signing four sweeping executive orders that will lead to massive reduction in drug costs. Massive. We've already gotten them down a little bit, but that's not good enough. First time in 51 years, as I said, but that's not good enough. They represent the most far-reaching prescription drug reforms ever issued by a president. Nothing even close.
Okay, that's it. All right, that was a little anticlimactic.
Yeah, you don't like listening to Trump talk?
I don't.
That is funny to me.
Is it?
Yeah, you're a fan and can't stand to hear the man talk.
I guess I'm kind of a fan.
Yeah, I would say okay. The Nile's just not a river in Egypt anymore. Brian, not a come on. Cool.
I'm about deeds more than words.
Deeds more than words. Okay, fair enough.
And I just cringe every time he tries to use words.
Yeah, like I said, I think you know, he should like if there was a Nobel Prize for communication, he probably would win it.
Yeah, but the thing is people wonder whether he does it on purpose or not. Because apparently, as much of an idiot as we thought George W. Bush was, like, apparently, I don't know, I've heard that he just had that all shucks, stupid cowboy shtick. Just, it was like a manufactured almost. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I think I've seen interviews of him when he was back in Texas before he became governor. And yeah, there's no doubt.
He was normal.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think any of those guys, you know, East Coast, you know, if your father and your father's father went to Yale, and you come across as an old shucks, you know, good old boy Texan.
Great point. Yeah.
I mean, George W. Bush's grandfather was a senator in Connecticut.
So, not even from Texas. Yeah.
So like the. Anyone who thought that was real was, I don't want to say stupid, but just, you know, yeah.
Well, Joe, I made a point of calling out the pharmacy benefit manager middleman.
Yes, you did.
And I want to play this for everyone because this is This will just piss you off, man. Here we go. And this is a, I think this is a kind of a longer clip, but it's worth listening to. So
let's talk about the pharmacy benefit manager's role. Pharmacy benefit managers, or PBMs, were created to assist health plan clients by navigating and negotiating with drug manufacturers and pharmacy providers to optimize service and price-related value. The value was in removing these challenges and complexities by offering a simple, transparent process in exchange for a flat administrative fee on a per-claim basis. However, the gap between the drug plan's owner and its members led to increasingly complex pricing arrangements with diminishing transparency. This allowed PBMs to design creative new ways to diversify and enhance their profits at the expense of the client plan and its members. Today, with 80% of the prescription market, the three largest PBMs also control their health plan clients' drug formularies. This gives them tremendous influence with both drug manufacturers and national chain pharmacies, explaining the erosion of price transparencies and escalation of drug costs to the health plans. The following are several PBM games. The spread game. Tom just had his prescription filled at the local pharmacy, for which your PBM paid a total of $10. However, your PBM invoice reflects a $100 charge for that same drug in addition to its $2 administrative fee. Therefore, you pay a total of $102, resulting in a net of $92 retained by the PBM for managing that particular prescription. PBM represents the drug costs paid to the pharmacy as being $100, not the actual paid amount of $10, allowing PBM to retain the extra $90 without its client's awareness. The repackaging and repricing game. The PBM pushes your health plan and Tom to their mail order pharmacy by offering you deeper discounts and/or elimination of the administrative fee, and offering Tom to reduce or eliminate his copays. Because the PBM repackages the drug, they can now arbitrarily assign a new AWP price of its own choosing with no obligation to inform the health plan. For example, the Lipitor prescription at a retail pharmacy costs AWP $441, minus a 15% discount, plus a $2 administrative fee, equals $376.85. When repackaged and repriced, the same medication ends up costing AWP $684, minus the 20% discount, plus a $0 administrative fee. That equals $547.20. Mail order pharmacy costs the health plan $170.35 more than the same drug dispensed by a local pharmacy. Repackaging and repricing, while technically legal, is certainly not ethical. And the largest PBMs continue to exploit their trusted advocacy role to enhance their profit margins at the expense of their health plan client. The rebate game. Tom's health plan won't pay for his $20 generic antacid prescription, but will pay for Nexium, the $148 brand name drug for the same concern. The PBM pays the pharmacy the $148, with $10 of a $50 total drug manufacturer rebate going to Tom's health plan and the remaining $40 returning to the PBM. This arrangement costs Tom's health plan $138 instead of the $20 for the generic drug. Mail order waste. With the PBM's misaligned financial model and its ability to exploit the gap between the plan owner or payer and plan member or user of pharmacy services, the PBM-owned mail order pharmacies have financial motivation to continue shipping unwanted or unnecessary medications. Hence, the mail order waste game, as one of multiple opportunities tied to the PBM's ownership of mail order pharmacies.
Yeah, so if those motherfuckers get shut down, this is a good thing.
Yeah, that makes me think, like, how many other players are there involved in the whole pharmacy racket, and how many of those other players actually contribute value to, you know, whatever medicine or service they're producing, versus how many vultures are just there, just hanging on, picking up and gobbling up scrap.
Yeah.
Yep, I agree. And I suspect there are probably a lot more hangers-on than there are, you know, people who are, you know, pushing progress or are you know, moving the ball forward, so to speak.
Yeah, I agree.
Where do you get that from?
I heard them talking about it on No Agenda, and so...
Yeah, I mean, the person who did that readout could have easily have been on a pharmaceutical ad because, I mean,
yeah.
the horrible, grimy stuff he was talking about sound quite, you know, not that bad, you know. Just right. Because of the way and the tone and the cadence in which he was talking about it. Like, oh, what? You mean bilking... booking insurance companies and the customers for hundreds of dollars per prescription? That just sounds almost reasonable if you put in those terms. Of course they would do that. And which makes me more convinced that, yeah, there are a lot of players in that game that are somewhat very evil. I got to stop calling people evil. That's just, you know, that's not good.
Yeah.
I mean, because once you call somebody evil, you don't have to really think about them anymore. You're like, yep, they're just bad.
Well, that's true.
So, yeah, I need. But sometimes, it, you know, just because I do it a lot doesn't mean I need to stop. I just need to think about it more after they get called evil. Why? But very interesting, and I am pissed off. Congratulations, Mr. Newman.
Well, Joe, we're at about minus the time before we actually started, we're at about an hour and a half right now. So,
Time to have a good time.
We do, and I think this has been a good show. What do you want to do? I mean, this would be a good time for us to wrap things up and save some of these other things for next week, but I'll defer to you.
Well, no, let's wrap it up. A good tight hour and a half show is to be desired.
Yeah, I think this will be a good one. I have one more clip that I want to play for us. That when you hear the headline that was accompanying this clip was once you hear it, you can't unhear it.
Yeah.
And so and then when you listen you listen to this and you just almost have to ask yourself, are they the elites? Are they just fucking with us? So
let's hear it.
Enjoy this.
This morning, as COVID cases mount across the country, the mass debate is intensifying.
People are very passionate on both sides of the great mass debate.
The partisan mass debate is heating up.
Mass debate's growing.
The president is trying to have us cover the mass debate.
CVS, Target, and Walgreens are getting in on the mass debate.
The mass debate now taking center stage at local restaurants.
It's 9 minutes after six now, and there's new video of a raging mass debate.
The mass debate in Georgia is getting ugly.
The great mass debate in West Virginia might soon be coming to an end.
This mass debate is far from over.
How many mass debates have you gotten into? Love to hear it.
The mass debate was taken to a whole nother level.
Bishop David Zubik tells Pittsburgh's Action News 4 he found himself in the middle of a mass debate.
We'll dive deeper into this pet store mass debate.
So we're going to begin with this thing we're calling the great mass debate.
let me guess what that was about. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, I mean, I get this sense that there was a debate about masks.
Oh, wow.
I may have missed something.
This is fascinating, Joe. Because, wow, this is something. This is crazy.
What?
Yes, I know what they were saying, but all I heard them doing was talking about masturbating.
Masturbate. Okay. You think? Yeah. That I'm slow. Masturbate. That was funny. That was a great way to go out.
You caught me. That was good.
Yeah.
Well, Joe, this has been fun.
That was rich, Mr. Newman. That was
thank
rich.
You, thank you. I thought you'd like that. This has been fun. I hope that people were entertained and educated.
Edumacated.
And I got an idea. Right, let's do this again in 7 days. What do you say?
Sounds like trouble, but count me in.
There you go. All right. Take care, brother, and we'll talk to you later.
I like it. Take care. Bye-bye.
It's fight day, and man, am I hype. Whoa, I can't wait to see Mike. Boy, I'm hype, ready to do my thing, Trump Castle Casino.
In this corner, weighing in at 165 pounds, the Lightning Rod, the Fresh Prince. In this corner, the heavyweight champion of the world, Mike Tyson.
I came out hustling, sliding and grabbing, slipping and dipping, hustling and jabbing. For a second, I look good out there, but then Mike runs to reality, my worst nightmare. One punch, that's all it took. He hit me in my ribs and my inside shook. Now how can I say this and be a little discreet? Let's just say that my bowels released. I called time out and went back to my corner. Said to my coach, ain't no way I'm going to hell back out there, man, you can't forget it. My body's like a punching bag and Mike is gonna
hit it.
They tried to make me go meet my doom, but I sucker punched my coach and hauled to my dressing room. The next day, the headline in the town, Fresh Prince breaks camp, Tyson wins first round. Some fool asked why I ran away. I said a good run is better than a bad stand any day. My career is over as far as fighting, but I don't know what made me think I could beat Mike Tyson. Hey, Leroy!
Yeah?
Did you see the fight? Did you see the fight?
The football player?
No, the boxer. Come on, man. I was at the fight last night. I paid $474,000 for my ticket, right?
Fight. I seen you around here, man.
The ball ran out the ring.
You're always lying.
I ain't lying.
The lot of your
I seen it. Mike Tyson.